Correct. Actually, in reality, if we look at it, the entity actually is there is a liability out there. It's actually a true liability, meaning, quite frankly, if you go out to try to get a loan, for example, when the bank or the financial institution look at it, they will see that, oh, you guys have, you know, approximately, you know, $6-7 million out there that is obligated that you need to pay down, right? So that is a true liability.
Again, that's something every public agency
Absolutely. Every public agency is being, you know, right now everybody have to go through GASB 34, which is a good reporting model where the government, it used not to be recognized all this liability. Now they brought in the pension several years ago. Now they have to bring in the OPAP. Same thing with the asset side, right? Like if you have a firehouse or maybe a police station, they used not to recognize any of the fire truck. Those fire truck is like $700,000 or $1 million piece. Those are not on the book. And now they have to come in and record it on the book. So, and it will make the financial statement a lot more accurate, you know. So basically, in other words, if you guys were thinking, oh, you know, what happened if the agency shut down the door tomorrow? You cannot shut down the door tomorrow because you have $6-7 million liability. You have to get certain annuity, for example, to take care of this liability before you could, you know. That's, you know, that's right. So that's the major changes. Net asset, you know, from 3.6 million now this year is 3. This year is about $600,000. Net bottom line is $599,000 net equity for the entity. Balance sheet wise, you know, asset cash is pretty consistent. Last year total cash and account receivable, we're looking at about 2.4. This year is about 2.5, so we're looking at approximately, you know, a little bit close to $100,000 increase. Capital asset is approximately the same. As we know, the district, you know, the community center, nothing is, you know, there's no new addition, anything yet. So fixed asset remain the same. Liability change, and that's probably the one, the majors changes out there on the balance sheet. Very straightforward. Next page is page number 9 and number 10, which is your profit and loss for the year. Current year on page number 9, current year total expenditure is approximately 3.3 million versus 2.9 from 2017. Couple of the key area the changes. One is the salary. Salary overtime and officer regular time is approximately, we're looking at about $888,000 for fiscal year ended 2018. In 2017, the total officer salary is approximately $1 million. So there is approximately $120,000 decrease in salary expenses because you have less officer. Another reason why overtime went up too, because, you know, some of the current officers have to pick up the slack, you know.
Why do we set up budgets as we did in this last year with 10 officers when we knew there was no way we would fill out that year with 10 officers?
Stephen, why? Well, that's a budgeting question. We always budget with what's the approved allocation.
There's always hope, Jim.
Hey, Debbie.
There's always hope.
Right.
Would have to happen real fast. Fill out the full year.
I guess you do want to anticipate you're going to replace those officers to try to minimize the overtime, right? Because the overtime's a lot of money, too.
It seems to me that in the past, we had said, okay, we might get a new officer in December and another one in March, but now we're saying we're going to have a full staff starting on day one. And I never understood why we would do something like that.
Right. I think for to answer that question is more to probably to Tony and the budget and maybe could.
Last year we did not budget that they were all starting July 1st. We did stagger them, if you remember.
Correct.
Yeah. And I assume we'll do the same this year.
And what are we going to do this year?
I think we're going to do something similar.
This year or the previous year?
1920? For 1920 you're talking about?
No, there's probably going to stagger this coming.
I believe so.
You're going to stagger this time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Good.
Okay, so that's what happened with the salary of officer. Again, when we compare 2 years, we're looking at about $125,000 decrease in expenses from 2017 to 18. Medical insurance, retire, PERS, that total expenses for the year is $236,000. That's a major change. Versus only $25,000 the year before. We're looking at about $220,000 increase just on that one line item. That is the OPEB expenses.
But that's adjusted for the, that's not necessarily cash what we paid. That's adjusted for the GASB 68.
Right. With the PERS, current year expenses is $654,000. Versus the year before is $348,000. The expenses is increase for for the 2 years. The district pick up, approximately almost double for the pension. Legal expenses for the police is $81,000 expenses for 2018. Where there's no legal expenses for 2017.
And if you recall, that's not exactly true either. That was because in 2018, we started dividing the police portion from the district portion.
Correct.
Before it was all sitting under 830 legal expenses. So there were legal expenses related to police, but we didn't have a separate account for it in 17.
That's right, because in 2017, it was just one line item where under the district for $227,000.
Correct.
You're going to see that probably like under the district expenses. This year is only $76,000 for district legal expenses versus $200,000 for the year before. So basically, it's just allocation between the police department and the district separated.
So overall, there's a drop in legal.
Correct. And then other than that, that's probably both of those changes. And again, total expenditure for the year is about $3.3 million versus $2.9 the year before.
Just a small question. Please remind me what the county expense is.
The county expenses, the fee that we pay the county to administer for our taxes and the check writing and things like that.
Okay.
It's all the services we use them for.
The Contra Costa County. Basically, they are your bank.
Yes.
They handle all your finance.
Right.
Your property, all the secure and unsecured property tax.
Right.
They do all the services for you. That's what they charge you.
Okay. I forgot.
Right. And then on page number 10, we're looking at the total revenue. Total revenue is about $3.3 million versus $3.4 from the year before. We're looking at just approximately, maybe 4%. Very small changes between the 2 years because bulk of your money is really coming from your property tax and your special assessment. Those are pretty consistent. The net bottom line, fiscal year 2018, you guys have a loss of $73,000 versus in the past couple years, you guys usually bring in approximately about $400,000 to $500,000 net changes, net income. Because with the higher cost for the pension and retirement that really brought down the net bottom line. So the current year is a loss of $73,000, versus about $585,000 of net income from prior years.
Is that a real loss, or is that just on paper because of the GASB?
It's on paper.
On paper. Paper.
Yes. Okay. Right. So it's not really a cash loss situation. And so basically that is the financial highlight, you know, for the profit and loss. And again, the biggest changes is just the OPEB that really, you know, change everybody's effect, have a big impact on the financial statement. But other than that, like I said, it's a clean audit opinion. The internal control is there. And we check diligently on payroll and on all the expenses, and they are all in very good shape, and I don't have any problem with those areas.
Which page is, I've been through it, which page is the cash flow on?
On the financial statement, we don't have a cash flow presented.
Wouldn't that, I thought that was part of the audit. No?
Statement, no. On statement of cash flow.
Steve, on page 4, at the bottom, you have the June 30th, 2018 and June 30th, 2017 comparison. Is that difference largely run by GASB and the OPEB?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Make sure.
The biggest, again, the biggest changes between the 2 year on the net position is in 2017 you have $3.6 million of net asset. But because of the GASB OPEB,
right,
with the adjustment of the $3.6 million as a liability, that pretty much wiped out both of your net asset.
Got it.
Is it just simply not out of practice in California not to do a cash flow statement?
Usually on for special district, it's not necessary that to have a cash flow statement. That's why it's not presented on here. But with regular not-for-profit or a private business, yes, definitely. Cash flow financial is definitely required.
Would it cost as much to get that from now on?
No. It's cash flow is should be pretty straightforward.
It should just spill right out.
Yeah.
Can we do that?
Sure. We could add that on there.
Okay. I think that would be a good idea.
You're talking about future years.
It can be future.
Is that easy to do, Stephen, for this year?
Cash flow should be pretty straightforward to do, because basically
he wants to know, can they get one for this year?
Oh, to include it with this report?
Yes.
When is this report going to the board?
Tomorrow.
May 17th. When do we have to have it in our hands?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If it's too difficult, Stephen, if it's too complicated.
But it should just go right out of all the data you have, right?
It should be.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be. But it depends on the timing, because you have to get this to the board in certain time for them to look at it.
Yeah, right? But if we get it by May 16th, that would be the week before
the
May 23rd.
So the meeting is, if they had it a week before, they'd be okay.
Yeah, I think that should be doable.
It's doable?
Yeah.
And then can we make it out of policy from now on that we always have one?
I think if I have a week of time, we should be able to produce a cash flow.
Yeah, and then for all future
it's
years.
Just... Absolutely, because it's just a matter of reversing out all the accrued items.
Yeah.
Basically, that's what it is.
Okay.
And then you could see all your finance item, your investment activity, and your operation. So
That would be good.
Right. For indirect method, it's very straightforward. That shouldn't be a problem. Direct method is different. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so I could do that.
Thank you.
Okay.
So, on page 24, apparently you should assume that the pension liability that we is unfunded is about $3.9 million, is that correct?
3.8 million. That's correct.
Right. Well, I'll call it 3.9.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If you round it up, 3.9. Yes.
And then on the
correct 3.9.
On the amount of money that we owe for our medical liabilities, that was about 3.2. Is that
3.2?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're actually up
7.1. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 7.2 to be, I would say approximately $7.2 million. Correct.
How realistic is that 7.15% on discount rate?
Probably high.
Probably high, yeah. Well, we don't know.
So you're saying is that maybe too conservative and that we that a 6.15 may be more realistic? 6.15 may be more realistic. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no. I don't. Well, I don't know about that, but I do think, you know, CalPERS wants to lower it down to assuming that they will get a 7% return.
Right.
Do I think that that's realistic? No.
And they got a minus 3.5% return.
Last year, yeah.
Well, as we talked about, that was through December, and you'll recall the stock market really plummeted end of December. It's come back up, so it'd be difficult to say where it's going to end up on June 30th. Yeah. This might be an okay year. It's where we're going to be the following year. And to answer your question, is an assumed 7% continuously realistic? Well,
it's supposed to be projected over 20 years or 30 years, depending on the options.
What do you people think? Do you think that that is realistic?
You ask me or ask her? I think everybody would have a different answer. Quite frankly, 7.1 is what CalPERS think that they could get, but...
I have an opinion.
I'm conservative.
I think that's your opinion,
Rob.
I happen to think so, too. I think the 6% might be more realistic. But.
The forecast model that was finished even 4 years ago predicted that they'd have trouble about every... Well, okay, it predicted back then that there's basically a four-year cycle that they've gotten themselves into by their own machinations on their own manipulation of their funds. And it was saying that this last year, they would have some trouble and that it's going to do better this coming year. And it might do well for the next 2 years, and then it's going to start going back down again. That's not a prediction. It's just a tendency of them to overreact and then compensate and then overreact. And it's roughly a four-year cycle. The answer is we don't know where they'll be, but we know that the volatility is huge and that they induce that volatility themselves almost as much as the market induces it. The market's been pretty steady overall. They are not steady. And the answer has to be that they are violating one of the most fundamental principles of market investing, which is over-manipulation of their stock buying and selling.
I
was going to say, what are they historically, do we know?
Over time.
Here, he's got it.
Oh, goodness.
I see it. Well, it's exactly what Rob's saying.
And it looks like the heartbeat of a IBEX
being chased. Someone's going to die.
Not good.
If they had left it with the that's the best return you got going. Yeah.
Maybe they invest all their money in Amazon or something, then they will come out ahead.
Well, I think
they didn't put it in the Google.
It's a unicorn stocks.
Bill, are these the separate year rates, or is this an average to date at the bottom?
Those are the separate years, aren't they not?
Okay, yeah. Do we don't know what that equals. Yeah. I mean, 09, okay,
Yeah, everybody suffered from that.
Yeah.
What we do know is that
they do have some high years, which is
what we do know is that our unfunded liability keeps going up.
Correct. Right. We all would agree that the 3.9 is probably the minimum, right? If everybody thinks that 7.15 is too high, it's only going to get worse from there, right?
Well, we should just protect ourselves with a conservative assumption, since we can't rely on them to be steady. Even though it seems to me they could be steady, and what they do with us, because they're not going bankrupt even in a bad year, right? Which relates back to one reason they give us a little break, right? By amortizing their requirements for us, right? Across multiple years. Seems to me they could be a little softer on us.
Because we always have this discussion, but we can't make them do, you know, what we think would be helpful. That's the problem. But I do think that sheds light, whether that's the exact number or not. You know, putting $7.1 million on your books it makes you wake up, right? It's a big hit.
Stephen, I have another question on page 11. You've got
that's the fiduciary. Mm-hmm.
Well, the total positions, net position reserve for Emergency Preparedness Council and reserve for Reassessment District.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what those are.
These are our fiduciary accounts. So originally we had an Emergency Preparedness Council. I want to say that you shared with the fire.
Yes.
And I think that has gone away now. I don't think there's any money left in there. But the Reassessment District, that's the bond. So this is the bond, and it's not on our books per se. It's a fiduciary relationship, right? We manage it, but it's not exactly our monies, so they're listed separately.
Okay.
Right. That's why it's a separate away from the general fund, and it's fiduciary fund by itself.
Mm-hmm. I think next year we wouldn't present the EPC. I think we were just clearing it off this year, if I recall, and it will be gone
right
next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I see on page 15 there's a scheduled year for completion of the budget, and it said that May 1st. Anything on that? On where the budget is?
The budget is in process to be presented on May 23rd. Isn't that when you guys are meeting? Mm-hmm. Is that you or the board meeting?
May 23rd is a board meeting.
May
21st is a finance
committee.
Okay,
May 21st. Going to
May 21st is finance.
Right.
And then the
board meeting is the 23rd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it says it should be finished, or it should be presented in May.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we were it's in progress. You're waiting for this document. This document came in yesterday afternoon. So, or I guess actually it came in Tuesday afternoon, yeah.
A question, a process question, Stephen. How much longer did it take to prepare the audited financial statement this year because of the introduction of the GASB?
Well, it took approximately, I would say, hour-wise, if we grouped it all together, it's probably additional 45 somewhere. Especially going through the footnote disclosure, we got to make sure the balance sheet, the number is tying with the footnote. Actually, me and Debbie spent quite a bit of time going back and forth.
Yeah.
And you know, I have the number presented. She have a question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is this way? And which is good. I mean, she's like, I'm the doctor, you're the patient, and she's the nurse. You know, and she is. So we got the financial statement done. I'm very comfortable with all the numbers and all the footnote disclosures.
So I have two minor twits on page 5. In the first paragraph, the 1, 2, 3, 4th line, that tell county auditor controller, remove the apostrophe. Top paragraph.
Top paragraph.
Fourth line.
Okay.
that tell county auditor controller, remove mm-hmm. the apostrophe.
Okay.
And then on page 7, we no longer have a combined general manager and chief of police.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So all those people who know that I take pride in not balancing my checkbook, I want you to know that I read this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I will make those changes on the next draft with the cash flow together.
Or great. Is those okay. 2 pages?
Could I follow up on that?
More than 2 questions, Rob.
the question that I was just asking, in terms of the amount of time it takes, so next year when you go to prepare the financial statement, having gone through the introduction phase
the implementation.
Year, yes. So should next year
it will be
more quickly?
Yes, absolutely. It's just always the initial year with this
yes.
kind of big implementation. It takes more time and going back and forth. And unfortunately, we ran into the tax season, and we, you know, we would get a little hiccup there. So,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I wonder if this could be started sooner, and maybe even started in like October.
If as soon as the book closed in October, yeah. we could schedule to go earlier, definitely.
Yes.
And then
possible?
We could get it done.
It depends. I mean, we have to look. I
we have to look at calendars.
Yeah, if everybody can pick a date, we can try for earlier. If we do it, we'll try to schedule early.
That would be good.
Right. Then we could get it done before December. It should be ideal.
So yes. What do we need to do in order to effect that? How do we get that started, Debbie?
We'll just look at our calendars and try to put something
right.
on sooner.
Okay, so you'll let Tony know?
Yeah.
Okay.
We just have to work up the audit calendar way ahead, maybe, sometime in June or July, we firm up the day
okay.
that certain, the financial information, when the book is closed and when all the schedules available for me, let's say, hypothetical,
there's a lot of year-end
beginning
work I have
of October, then we
can
get
yeah.
schedule
exactly.
it, come
yeah.
in. Get the work done,
we'll
and then
the budget
till get,
the last, till June, and then start
work.
Fresh to clear
good.
Up the year
right.
and get ready.
Ideally, is get the district financial audit finished before December 31st,
yeah.
because now the state is getting smarter. They changed 2 years ago and pushed the state transaction report in January 31st. Because most of the district, before they want everybody to do it in July, you end the fiscal year in June, all the information they're getting is all pre-audited, so they're getting a lot of trouble. So now they finally switched it to January. So by December, if you finish the audit, then the audit number will input it into the system and there's no more changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
It does make a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
So are there any other questions on from the committee on the audit?
I would just like an explanation on page 20 of note 4. I've never understood this whole special assessment thing.
Oh, this is the
font.
Yes.
This was
page 20 on note 4?
Page 20.
Page 20.
At the
note
bottom.
4.
The bottom,
the very
special
bottom.
Assessment.
At the very
yeah.
bottom.
Note 4.
Oh,
no. There. You're thinking
of
footnote.
I was thinking of, yeah.
Explain. This is the bond for the purchase of the property here. All right? Or not?
The bond is for the park.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we now still have about $450,000 remaining to be paid off.
Correct.
In truth, of course, we've made the payment for, this was June 30th, 18, so we've made a payment since then.
Okay.
But at this point,
yeah.
we did, yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. At that point, we did.
Mm-hmm.
And and the payment was $140,000.
Mm-hmm.
Principal payment.
Yeah. Where does that money come from? I've never understood that.
It comes from the piece of your property taxes.
It's a separate property tax line.
Correct. And that's what the fiduciary statement we were looking at shows you. So if you go back to page, 12.
Yes, 12. That's that $180.
10, 11 and 12. So 11 being the balance sheet one and 12 being the income statement.
Mm-hmm.
See the money that says special assessments, $180 that is income. That's the monies collected off of the property taxes.
Top there? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we make a little interest income on it. And then there's some admin charges. That's for NBS to chase down the bills and whatnot. And then you have your bond expenses and your bond principal. You see that payment there. Mm-hmm. And that is all run through. Okay. So that's why it's on fiduciary. It doesn't really come into our checking account. We don't pay out of ours. It really is.
I just wondered how that got there.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Now, also, and I don't know what page it was on, you make reference to the fact that we have sitting out at the county $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know where that is?
Page 8. Mm-hmm. Cash and investments.
Page 18.
$2.2 million.
Mm-hmm. Page 18.
Oh, that's
fine.
Either way.
Right. Page 8, it's $2.2 million sitting with the county office.
Correct.
Is that money pulled out periodically to pay for our obligations for police, etc.?
That's all our money. That's our checking account.
Okay.
It's our savings account
and our checking account. So most of the cash mm-hmm. remains in the savings account, the LAFE account, mm-hmm. and then periodically at the end of each check run, after payroll and accounts payable, paid twice a month, then if more money's needed to make sure we have enough to pay the next set of checks, money's transferred from the LAFE account to the general fund.
The reason why I'm asking on that is because when we were talking about the costs for doing the improvements mm-hmm. to the community center, we talked about the fact that, well, we have to have some cash on hand. Remember, we had this conversation.
Right.
But we currently have $2 million sitting out there. We have a lot of cash on hand.
Mm-hmm.
We could, with that money, we could meet those obligations up until December when we get our first payment for our real estate taxes.
But that's as of June 30th. And then you don't get much revenue after that. So you draw that down July, August, September.
You still have to.
But it is $2 million.
As of June 30th.
It was.
2018.
It was. Right. But I think if you checked that balance in
now,
in November, it would have been much less, right?
Correct.
We have that information.
How much is it?
Yeah, it was that information.
And then December, you get more money, right?
Right, right, right.
Because your property tax, they pay in.
Right.
And so, but you have to check with the county office. And I believe they are on the plan where if you're short, they also will lend you some money first.
After free.
Exactly.
Such a deal.
They are your bigger brother. Okay.
Eileen, there's just on page 35.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of a good one because it compares budget to actual.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the supplementary schedule.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And everybody, I got that where you. I did this at the last minute. I just got the word. I wasn't at the last meeting, but you wanted the actual account numbers.
Yes.
Okay, so they're here. And that way, when you go to look at budget versus actual, these are rolled up, right? So they have combined. But I have provided you the detail by account number that you're used to seeing with every line item.
Good.
Okay. You can pass these around.
Yeah, thanks for doing that.
You're welcome.
That helps a lot.
Bill, did you have a comment or a question on this?
No,
you just want to draw it to their attention.
Well,
are you ignoring Dave on purpose?
Oh.
Yes. If you would want to ignore anyone, it might be Dave.
Appreciate that.
So,
you know, if you look at that page 35.
Does that have them all in there? Mm-hmm. No, here it is. Yeah, that didn't seem like a state one.
Yes.
So it's... You were
budgeted for almost a $300,000 loss, and you actually were positive. So there's a $515,000 difference. Yeah, but that's before.
Yeah, that's the transfer.
In large part because we assumed we were going to have 10 officers fully staffed, etc.
Right. Yeah. We expected to spend some money on the parks, which
yes,
we did not.
Correct. And of course, one of the big items is that at that year we had not budgeted for the COPS grant money, and we got in $151,000. So that's a big chunk of it too.
And we haven't figured out why that's so inconsistent.
Well, I guess we're changing
it. The way it comes in 1 year.
Oh no! And I've tried calling, and they won't give you any information, even to tell you. It used to be that we got the whole 100,000. Right. Then they started being poor and they paid it in a few chunks, but it always came to 100,000. It was only a couple of years ago that we started getting more, but we got it so late. I mean, as late as like October the next year, that you don't know that it, you know when you get it that it belonged to the prior year, but when I'm accruing and trying to close the books, I don't know what to expect.
Sure.
So unfortunately, I've always now, because I've tried talking to him, can you tell us how much more is coming our way? No. So I can only accrue for the 100,000 unless like this time we started so late, I actually had the advantage of knowing what was coming in. But if we close earlier, we don't.
And there was a 148,000?
148 was for COPS, actually, you're right. And there was a little bit for the vests. We got a vest.
Does that just top out exactly at 150, or is it?
No, it was like 153.
Yeah, it goes over, right?
What goes over?
When you add the two together, the 148 plus the vests.
Oh.
Yeah,
one,
but they're different.
Be 151,
we won't get the
vest
one again.
Right.
That was just a safety vest.
Yeah. Are you saying they add to more than 151? Is that what you're saying?
More than 150.
More than 150, yes. Right. We've got 151, yeah.
363. Okay, all right.
Could you help me on district expenses, what that includes?
So if you look at this, it'll give you every line item. There you go. I'm not throwing, I'm just tossing. That will have every line item, so you can actually see where the differences are. And if you look at the MD&A, it draws out sort of the big discrepancies, right? So, let's see, on page. Let me see. Is it page 5 that we say that?
Okay. So just that's 800.
On page 5 it says district expenses were over budget by 95,000. Mm-hmm. The two largest items were over budget. At legal district by approximately 23.5 and consulting by 49. Those are sort of the big differences. But if you want the detail of every account, it's on here.
So which one is district expenses on this sheet?
On which sheet are you pointing? This sheet?
This one here,
page 3.
District expenses are your 800 accounts.
Which page are we on?
He's just looking at this.
Page 3.
Okay. He's just looking at this. 800 accounts. Tony, are the district expenses?
Well, because it says the first item is district salaries,
mm-hmm.
which is the first item under expenses.
No, the first item under expenses, those would be police salaries, right?
No, in the district.
He's now looking back at the audit.
No. So those are just police salaries. Those are not what's called
the police salaries and benefits at the $2.1 million you're talking about?
Right.
Yeah, that's just police salaries and benefits.
Okay, so these are non-police salary benefits. Yeah.
Correct. That would be you and Lynn.
And Andrea.
Andrea goes into park.
Oh, she goes into park?
Yeah.
District.
She's park police
and
park district. Yeah. So that's what I was saying. Same thing, Tony. If you look at page 1 and you see the 500...
I got mixed up with salaries. That's right.
Okay.
So it was consulting and legal.
Those are big.
Correct. Those are the ones that were over. The biggest over. But like I said, you can look and see which way they go. A little over, a little under on other things.
Did we discuss the bond issue expenses yet? Account 701.
What is it? Are you asking me what's in that account?
Did we discuss that? Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't know if we did. That is usually NBS. We have a company called NBS that does the tax rolls. They put everything on the tax rolls for the city and county, and they follow up then with the late notices if someone hasn't paid and that kind of thing. And they do a little bit of reporting budgeting, you know, you have, there's requirements that have to be reported.
So, Rob, were you at the last board meeting?
That's a special assessment.
No.
At the last board meeting, there was an annual report that was distributed that had to do with the park bond. Okay. And so this is a report that they produce annually, and they go through the list of every parcel in Kensington, and they evaluate how much they owe. So they do a lot of sort of menial, tedious work, but it's got to be done.
Yeah. And, okay.
Yeah. Okay. And if they keep track, if anybody prepays, you can pay off your bond early and that kind of stuff. And they so they just handle our bond stuff.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, any other questions on the audit? Any other questions? Okay. So, is there a recommendation to forward this to the board for approval?
With the addition of the cash flow statement.
Do you want to make that motion?
I move that we approve this audit if it will include by May 17 a cash flow statement, an audited cash flow statement.
Okay.
I'm willing to second that. You owe me.
Audited cash flow. Okay. And it's been seconded. Rochelle?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
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 Charles, yes. Okay. And Jim is yes. And Rob?
Yes.
And I will vote yes. So that's 6 yeses. Okay. And no noes. All right. The next item is...
I guess I could go on.
Thank you. Thank you for working on that cash flow.
Yes. I will have that.
Get going.
Yes.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, the next item is considering an OPEB pension trust, and Bill Zanoni prepared a one-page handout which was somehow attached to the financial audit. The last page. So.
And I actually reprinted it in a little bit. Maybe it's easier to follow if that's...
Sure.
Yep.
Oh, wow. It's even in color.
Well, it's in color.
That's right. I will be on your case.
I believe the purpose of this was just to kind of start the discussion on options.
Yes, indeed.
So we have, or the district has, as we already discussed, for the pension, an unfunded liability of $3.9 million. And right now, PERS is amortizing that unfunded liability over a 30-year period. And what if you can actually go on the PERS website, if you go on calpers.ca.gov and then you click under employer, you can see the actuarial report that they prepare every year. And with that report, that typically comes out July, August, September, sometimes a little bit later.
What was that website again?
calpers.ca.gov.
But which one do you click to see?
Employer. Right. And then go down to the bottom, and it'll say actuarial valuation reports. And if you type in Kensington, yeah, it'll pop right up. So we have an unfunded liability of right as of their last measurement date of $3.9 million. They're projecting, and what they do with their valuation is they project out costs going forward 5 years. And then every year they true it up. But based on where they sat last summer, they projected that the district's cost just for the unfunded liability was going to be, next year is set, that'll be $250,000. Mm-hmm. But it'll increase up to $400,000 by 2425.
Now, Bill, how much of that is interest? Right, they're charging interest on that.
Yes,
folding that in.
Yes.
How much of that is interest?
I will tell you that we have been always prepaying that in one lump sum, and we're saving
$7,000-$8,000.
I was going to say it's either 4 or 7%. I know it's a big difference. Yeah. I just am going by memory, yeah. But we save. I think we're saving basically most of the interest, because what they do is they quote you this amount, assuming you're going to pay it in 12 payments. And if you're willing to pay it by July 15th, you save that interest.
Mm-hmm. But the amount includes interest on the outstanding balance. Right?
What I'm saying is,
it
of
would
course,
be higher, right?
Of
it
course,
be
but
more.
The 250 is figured with interest,
yes.
Already, and you don't pay. I mean, it's not accruing in addition, but you can save the interest by prepaying.
And the 400 several years out, that is without interest. Is that right?
All right. That's assuming we make it. Right. We have to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. We have to pay it by July 15th.
Yes.
The unfunded liability piece.
To save the interest.
To save
but
the
I'm
interest.
Saying the 400 would be with interest, yeah. Assuming 12 payments. They don't quote you the prepaid yeah. Amount. We do
oh,
that on our own.
The 400 does. Yes,
with interest. Correct.
That does include that.
Correct. It okay. Does.
So our overall contribution rate next year for police is 50.6%. So 50.6% of payroll is going to CalPERS, and that covers both the normal cost or the current portion of the retirement and the unfunded liability.
Could I clarify?
I can clarify that, also.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It's only for the officers. So there's no PERS obligation for the non-sworn.
This is
true.
For the safety plan.
Yes,
this is right. The safety
but
plan.
But let me
yes.
Clarify. So the portion that's the employer portion is going to be about 22%, right? It's going up?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is a piece of that?
21.927. And
okay.
The rest is the unfunded liability.
Okay. But there's also a piece that we pay on the officer's
right.
Behalf.
In
that's in addition.
That,
okay, that's what
right.
I want to clarify.
In
plus, say the extra
just,
4%.
This and PERS doesn't care where that.
Correct.
Comes from.
I
this
did,
is what they're saying.
This is the employer portion, not the employer yeah. Paid employee
yes.
Portion. Okay.
And then, sorry to go back on some obvious points here. As these numbers increase, they are not compounding the interest, is that right? Because they assume that it is fully paid at least in 12 payments each year.
I would believe that's true, but...
Do you know, Bill?
I don't.
I think you're required to pay it, so I would assume that they're
that
starting
they,
over at the beginning of the year.
That they start over each year.
I would think so.
I
don't
so.
Know it for a fact, but...
So I think that the point of this is that our pension costs are increasing.
Yeah.
Everybody's is, but Kensington is no different. That your cost for your pension are going to increase, and we'll get to it in a minute, but they're going to increase even more than this based on what PERS is doing. So the basic rule of pensions is that contributions from the employer and the employee plus interest on that money has got to be enough to pay pensions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty simple math formula. At CalPERS, about 60% of that total pot of money comes from investment earnings, which is we've seen is pretty volatile. And the rest, about 41%, comes from employers and employees.
I have one more thing to delineate. Is this for this formula? Is this for us in particular? But is it
it's
counting
for everybody?
Oh, this is for everybody. So is it counting only a classic employee formula? Because the PEPRA employees is a completely different animal, mm-hmm. and we're having more and more PEPRA. So this 21% is only on classic employees. The PEPRA employees, it's about 11 or 12%.
Right, yes. Right.
And so...
But as of the last PERS valuation, we had one PEPRA employee.
We now have three.
Right.
But I'm saying we're, you know, going to run out
over
of
time,
classic.
Yeah.
So these, even though these costs project out in 2024, 25, we probably won't have too many classic employees at that point. This won't actually affect us in this way because the...
Well, because people that leave, depending how they leave, if they leave here and go somewhere else, you're still... You're not off the hook for paying their pension. So.
Well, so you have some for the retired people, but you aren't paying 50 cents on the dollar if you don't have any current salary.
Right.
I'm just saying this number assumes we're still having that same makeup, and
right.
I believe we will not. So I think, I mean, there will still be a cost.
Right.
Yeah.
It just depends who you hire and what their
we got transfers, but I mean, like you say, it's not.
Mostly,
that
if they're young coming in, they're going to be, it just seems like we haven't hired a classic employee that we didn't already have. I mean, we haven't hired.
Well, it's 2013, so it's 6 years, right? 6 years out. That's quite a while to be.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, I feel like we'll have a little bit of a benefit from that.
Right.
I think
what this chart shows is the biggest portion of the pension cost is coming from interest earnings, and interest earnings is the most volatile part of that.
That is true.
High.
Well,
imaginary interest earnings.
So what has changed recently is that PERS has changed their assumptions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They've changed their mortality assumptions. That's especially true for men, and it's especially true for police. So you get a double whammy here because men are living longer in general, and public safety, police, are working longer
mm-hmm.
in general. And so based on that, PERS is assuming that when people retire, they're going to live longer, and they're going to retire at a higher pension rate, and so they're going to have to pay out more. So that's figured into their costs, and we've already talked about their reduction in their assumed interest rate because their
investment rate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So for 1920, they're down to 7%, and they're talking about possibly going lower.
Right.
They haven't done it, but next year will be the third year of their reduction.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they've moved to more conservative investments because they've been criticized for losing money, and those conservative investments generate a lesser rate of return. Those things are all included in the numbers that are in the last valuation. What's not included in there is last year, last February of 2018, and the valuation that these numbers are based on, if there's anything that PERS did as of January of 18, the following month, the PERS board reduce the amortization period for any gains or losses after June of this year from 30 years down to 20 years. So it didn't change anything going back, but going forward, any gains or losses are going to be spread over a shorter period of time. And what that most likely will do in the short term is raise rates even higher. Contribution rates.
It would also make them more volatile, too.
Yes.
To us.
Yep.
Year to year.
Yes.
Great.
And their intent was
it's like they just can't stay away from it. They fix one thing and, you know,
right.
close a door, open a window,
else.
You know. They,
exactly.
Yeah. They just still end up in the same pattern.
That
yeah.
change will be reflected in the numbers that we get from PERS in a couple of months, in the next valuation.
But, and the whole reason for presenting this is, as we discussed before, we have reserves sitting in the county making piddly interest, And at the CSDA annual meeting last year, we learned about some of these trusts that we could put money in, and I asked Bill to look into that.
Yes.
And so that's the whole point.
So if you turn to the following page, mm-hmm. The result of these policy changes for the employer is not good. It means our rates are going to go up. One way or the other, we're going to pay more. So there's really only a couple of options, I believe. One is just to continue for the pension, to continue doing what we're currently doing and just paying what PERS tells us to pay, letting them apply it and continue to use their amortization schedule. Another option is to request PERS calls it a fresh start. You have to request it, they'll calculate it, and basically they rewrite your contract. And it's a one-way street. Once you go down that road, you can't come back. You can amend your contract with CalPERS and do a 20-year amortization period. And so what that does, these numbers are not, these are their estimates. I think it's attached on there, the last page. It kind of shows these are not actual numbers. They will calculate it, but you can see what the annual payments would be with what it currently is, and then with a 20-year and a 15-year amortization period. Mm. Ballpark. Again, those numbers, they would recalculate them if you actually ask them to.
But is there any advantage to doing that, Bill? Because we could voluntarily operate on a 15-year.
It's a huge risk to do that because, again, once you start that,
you're locked in.
Committed to it.
And, okay, but you can always just send extra, and it'll just be like the mortgage paid to principal, and then if you run into a hiccup, you're not locked into the higher amount.
Isn't that what was you're suggesting is that you just contribute more?
No. So I'm suggesting option four, which we haven't talked about yet.
So the third option is to just voluntarily. Last year you had $200,000 excess of revenues over expenditures, send that money to CalPERS. You can do that voluntarily. It's like making an extra payment on your mortgage. If you have extra money, you put it in. If you have a month where you don't, and you're not.
You're not locked in.
Well, I think wouldn't that the only reason even to go to a 20-year rate is that if they would give you a break on your percentage on your rate?
Well, they don't give you a break.
And they don't give you a break, right. So what's the point?
Right, you just pay it off quicker. Yeah. And you run the risk. You run the risk of them taking that money and investing it in either doing really well or mm-hmm. not.
So they're inviting you to lose money fast.
Yeah. I can't
see any reason of doing it.
What's the rate of return, the average rate of return been for, say, the last 15 years of our participation in the CERB Trust?
It's been...
The CERB...
This OPEB Trust.
The
OPEB is the...
Not the OPEB.
Is the medical.
Yeah. Okay.
The CERB is the medical. This is the pension.
I believe over the last 10 years, it...
I had that and I didn't bring it.
Yeah, I want to say it was, they said 11, it was going to be 11%.
It's been right around
10%.
So that's the fourth option, and that is to establish a 115 trust. And you can do it through PERS. There are a couple of agencies out there. PERS is one, PARS. There's another one that is probably more used by public agencies. But there's three or four that are out there. So, and it's very similar to the same thing as what you've done with your OPEB, is you can deposit money when you have it into a trust. You put it in when you've got it. When you don't have it, you don't have to put it in. You control how you want that money invested.
Right.
And if you hit a year where where, for whatever reason, the district is struggling financially, you can pull it out.
Really?
To only to pay pensions. So you can't pull it out for operating costs, but the biggest, you saw what a big chunk of your budget is. So it gives you some flexibility. They tend to perform very well, and you're not handing money to PERS that you lose control.
But it is PERS that's managing it, isn't it?
No. Well, in the CERB trust is where your OPEB is. PERS is managing it.
Okay.
These other ones, PERS has nothing to do with it.
So wait,
but who does manage them?
Yeah, who doesn't?
That's who does the management on the
The one that's PARS. PARS is Public Agency Retirement System. PARS. Theirs is managed by Mark. If you look on their website, you'll see that they have about 300 public agencies in California that put their pension and OPEB money.
And a lot of other agencies are doing this.
Yes.
And what is their record?
Yeah, I was going to say, what's their rate?
They're very similar. And when you, they have different, I believe they have five different options that you can pick as far as what your risk tolerance is.
Okay.
And the range is, the rate of return over the last 10 years, depending, you know, the more risky ones is higher, and the less risk. But I think the range has been at 5 to 10%. It's much more than what you're getting on money that's sitting.
Right, which is about 3% right now.
And you're not locked into anything with PERS. So it gives you some flexibility, and you're earning additional interest. It's an option.
Where can we see the performance on this?
I will bring those to the next meeting. You can look on their websites. They have that. PERS has it on their website, and PARS. But I'll put some charts together and bring them to the next meeting.
Can you Google 115 Trust and get these websites?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are those mostly cities and PERS?
Cities and special districts and counties. Yes.
Is there an initial contribution that we need to make?
No, there's no minimum. There's no minimum contribution. There's no required annual contribution. They charge. They charge a fee.
Yeah. What's their fee?
Charge a fee of. It's a little bit less than a percentage point, but the rate of return, that's netted out of the rate of return. Mm-hmm. So they don't do it for. It for free, but they still generate a higher.
So rate of return. This fund, as some money builds up. You take it out when you need it, when the time comes.
Yes.
Could you do it at any time?
Anytime.
Okay. Without penalty.
But you can only use it for pension. Yes.
So we could, in a way, then put money into the 115. Let's say, for sake of discussion, we put $100,000 in, and then we come to a year where we don't have a budget surplus, but we want to pay down our CalPERS liability. Can we take 115 and put it into CalPERS?
Yes. Yes.
Is it possible to? So I'm assuming that there are maybe four or five different strategy choices.
Yes.
Can we change strategy choices
year
to year?
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes. So he said there were five options.
If you have, let's say, just for the sake of discussion, 300 CalPERS agencies leaving CalPERS to go to PARS.
No, they're not leaving CalPERS. They're not. You're still in CalPERS. This is just putting money. This is just putting money.
It's
into
a different bank.
It's a different account that you can use towards CalPERS. You can build up funds in there, and then if you decide you want to make a lump sum payment to CalPERS, you can do that.
But you're reducing the amount of funds in CalPERS?
This is in addition to.
This is basically instead of our checking account, you would be holding money that you intended to put into pensions, you would be putting it into savings.
It's exactly what you're doing with OPEB. You're making your payment, and then you're putting extra into the OPEB trust. This is,
except that OPEB is monitored by CalPERS, so we don't have a separate. It's all through that trust.
No, it's two separate. You're making the required payments, and then you're putting money into the CERB trust. It's going into two different.
Think of it this way: that the county is paying us nothing.
So that's the point of comparison. It's not PERS.
And PERS is an option. You could put this into the same pot that your OPEB.
I think we're getting trust, is it 1.7%?
Almost 3%.
Oh, we're getting that much now?
So we're not really reducing the volatility of CalPERS UAL payments at all by doing this because they're independent.
Right.
And all it is moving money out of the county treasury into an investment fund offered by these people.
Right.
And we can choose what that one is, and we can change it year to year.
Right.
Okay.
But it's not the same. I mean, you can't spend the cash on anything. So if you found out you wanted to fund the building or pay straight salaries, you couldn't do that with that money.
So
it's not the same.
But what you could do, if you wanted to do that, you could take money that you would normally pay for pensions and do that. And I mean, that's not typically what someone would do, but you could get creative. But right, those dollars
they're locked away for that purpose. So they're not. They make a better rate of return, but they're not liquid like our checking account. So you just have to be sure you're putting that away.
The money comes off of your books.
Yeah.
Yes.
It comes off of your financial statements, and then it's in a trust.
Right, and you don't. Obviously, you don't take everything out of the treasury account.
No, you build it up and hope it's a.
I would say that if we were to go for that, then we're really deciding how much we want to pull out of our general checking account and moving in there, at least probably something of what we'd expect to pay per year or something like that.
Correct, because it's exactly what we were talking about. So it won't show on your financials. Your net position will drop, right? I mean, you'll have money set aside for that, but it won't be, you don't own it anymore.
And we've talked about part of the budget process, going to a 20-year amortization, and that's an option. Or you could take what you would have paid extra to PERS and put it into something like this.
Right. They don't have to be related.
Are there basically these two choices? One is to go to this new account that you have been talking about. And the other would be, and let's say we're going to put this year $200,000 in. We could also put that $200,000 into our CalPERS. We could add it to the amount that we would otherwise have put into CalPERS.
Yes.
And by putting it into CalPERS, it reduces the unfunded liability by $200,000. And the cost of that, CalPERS charges us 7%, right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
so if we were to put it in a lump sum extra to CalPERS, wouldn't we be reducing our unfunded liability by that amount and the 7% interest charged because it is unfunded?
Yes, and as long as CalPERS performs well, then that works. But when they don't, then they're like taking money in.
This is a vote of no confidence in CalPERS.
They're both options.
If you go to
one's
PERS,
good or bad, they're just different options.
All right.
That's all.
Well, plus also, I mean, once you give it to CalPERS, I mean, since it's gone out of this budget,
right?
As opposed to if we keep it just from the general fund, we still have, in a sense, two pots of money to work with to pay, and if we need to be creative or something like that.
Right.
You can bring it
back. A year,
yeah.
So
not totally
we'll
freely,
that.
But
yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Technically, we have two pots, but it's important to know it isn't part of ours. It's not our asset anymore. Once it's in the trust, it's not ours anymore. It's a trust meant for only that purpose, right? So it's off our books. So where we show we have $2 million cash, if we've put $500,000 into that trust, we have $1.5 million. We don't have that plus the trust. The trust is standalone.
So it has a ripple to our budgeting.
It will make you, yes, you have cash.
On paper, you still
have your money, and you still have it. If that's what you were going to do with the $500,000, then you're fine. If you wanted to this year use the $500,000 for some operating expense, that is not fine.
I would suggest to go on to the PARS website. I'll bring information to this meeting, or go on, or look at CalPERS and their CERP website, and you can see the number of agencies that are participating, and it's a lot.
Yeah,
if not most, I'd say most agencies now. This is something that they are doing.
Mm-hmm. Bill, you know, in the amortization, and I think
Jim had presented this also, the 20-year and the 15-year. On this chart, if you we go to the 20-year, we would save, I want to just make sure I'm reading it correctly, $77,000 over a 20-year period.
Correct.
Correct?
Correct.
But if we make it 5 years shorter, 15 years, we save $1 million.
Pretty substantial, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's a big difference. Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me, if we're going to do this, we should go to the 15-year.
But if that's on a voluntary basis.
On a voluntary basis, yeah.
I also just want to mention that I'm not sure how if you're aware or not. We have our money in LAIF right now, but...
In what?
In LAIF. Local agency pool.
Investment fund.
But it's a pool. You know, it's a shared pool. And so it's basically a savings account with, we'll say, a money market rate. You know, it gives
getting
you...
getting about a little bit under 2%,
I think
right?
we're getting almost three now. But, you know, it... Yeah, it was 2.86 or something. But anyway, it's by quarter, it's gone up. It That's used to, it, for a while, it was like 5 or 6% when things were booming. And then it's been down to like 0.1. Mm-hmm. So it just depends, right? It's just market driven. But I'm not sure if you're aware, but not CalPERS, the county also has sort of regular investments that you can buy into. You know, either based on, you know, mortgages or one-year CDs, all those different kinds they have. You can, if you're willing to set aside money for some length of time, and you can make it tiered level. FIRE is doing that, and they are making some pretty good interest. Now, you have to be able to, what they did was stagger so that maturity comes around. If you needed the money, there's money coming. And you have some that you can pull back, and you can leave some in LAIF so that it's available for payroll or whatever. But it is an option if you think you have money to put aside and yet would still be part of your budget, part of your an asset that you have.
And it can be used for anything.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so there is an option there, and they have all different kinds of things, and whenever you're ready to invest, let's say, you know, something just rolled over, you have a choice. They'll show you sort of what the yield is, what different kinds of investments based on your risk profile, and you can choose.
Who manages it for the fire district? How does the fire district board decides where the funds go?
I believe they do. When they set up what they thought was a basic strategy, and then they review it when something's coming due, whether they want to put it away for a year or two or...
They have a lot of CDs, mostly a CD investment, getting about 2.5% interest. And they're coming to, if you go to look at their finance document, you'll see that there's a whole slew of them, and a couple of them just came due on this patch.
So sometimes they do a discount, you know, you buy it at a discount and it has a maturity value, and then so you know what your rate of return is. You know, they are different vehicles, but I'm just saying that is an option if you want something more aggressive than LAIF. And maybe not locked away off your books. There is an in-between.
I don't know who they had. I mean, Jan Kosel has been their finance point person on their board for years. I think she may not be this year, but...
She is not.
Yeah, okay. But she set it up. She had the interview come a couple of years ago when the county came, when Russell Watts came and said... Because they were going to try and take their funds out
Correct.
Of LAIF
right.
and invest them with Wells Fargo. They had set up a ladder... system that was going to yield very highly, and the county completely threw a temper tantrum and said you can't do that unless you want to collect your own taxes. So exactly. So
that is the situation. You either have your money in the county or not in the county. And so if you're using the county for, I mean, that's how they're making some of their money, right? They're moving your funds.
Sure.
So if they're going to do those services, even though they charge you based on knowing they are also making some money, right? So if you're not going to invest your funds with them, then they're not doing the tax collecting and that kind of stuff. So then you have to hire somebody on an outside basis, assuming you don't want to collect the tax bills. Then you have to find an agency to do it. So that is what happened, and they did have a presentation, and they were able to find investments that sort of net what it would have cost them. They decided they were.
Is there a name for the county investments?
You mean like who would you contact?
No. I'm sorry. So you talk about our money right now is in LAIF.
Yes.
And then you're talking about these alternate investments that you can invest your money. Mm-hmm. The county will allow you. Is there a name for those alternate investments?
like a program name.
I don't know. I could try to find out, but I'm not sure. But I think it's easy enough. We can call the county and find out. So LAIF is essentially just a savings account that you can pull money out if you're not locked up in any. You know, you need a day or two notice, and that's it. But then these are more structured investments.
Okay.
But it's all through the county, and so they might have someone who's an investment person we can talk to. I can find out who that is.
No, it's structured investments is fine.
Okay.
I just wanted to name a particular name. I think that's worth looking into, though. Can you get some information on that?
I can contact them.
Sure.
And also, can you find out about, are we locked into LAIF? Because they collect the property taxes?
Well, LAIF is just their savings account, so it's either that or the checking account, which gets you zero, right? So we try not to leave money, excess money there, enough just to clear our bills.
If we pull out $500,000...
They don't care. FIRE has structured investments and still a LAIF pool. So they have some that they can pull for checking.
It's only if you pull all your funds out.
Yeah.
And if you put it all in investments with them, they're fine. It's only if you were to... You can't go... To Wells Fargo or Bank of America or something like that, separate, right?
But you could go into a 115 trust.
Yeah, because you're not pulling all your money.
Yeah.
Right. And
you're leaving something in LAIF.
And essentially, I mean, you're required for pension. I don't know. There must be some angle because we have the cert. We're allowed to have that, so I don't know.
Yeah, so you know, there you can do certain investments, but just not go to a bank or Morgan Stanley or whatever.
Yeah, because you're talking about taking out everything.
Or even if you take out part. That's what the fire district was talking about, was taking out part and going to Wells Fargo.
But they were going to take the vast
Well, they were
going to
invest all their savings. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know if it was fire and or police, but we used to keep money down at Mechanics
Bank.
And eventually they found out and they weren't happy, so that's a no-no.
Even with a little checking account?
I think
it's all or nothing.
Right. I guess you can have petty cash, right? But you're not supposed to be putting money in other institutions.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Well, this is really important. However, we don't have any money like that. We just don't. I mean, by the time we get done with the rebuilding, we owe an additional whatever, $40,000 payment. And we have the issue of the fire department. If they are going to be moving and building, then we are going to have to find a home. And there has to be all kinds of money. You know, this looks pretty interesting, but I don't see we have that money. Because if we had that money, we wouldn't have to borrow it to do the remodel. You can see that the first years, the difference between the 30 and the 15 is pretty substantial.
Right.
But then it narrows down where it becomes a lot easier.
Right.
You know, so if we were to have some extra couple of $100,000 and if we were settled home-wise, then that would be a different story. But I just don't see where we are at this point until we find out what's going to happen with the community center, our police force, and our home fire police force.
Well, I think the 115 option, though, Carl, could be something if we could get a higher interest rate with 115, and then even if we cash that out in a year to pay down the unfunded CalPERS liability, that's an attractive option to think about.
It won't be much, I agree. I mean, which is why we wouldn't start with it. Do the fresh start to get locked in. Right. That would just be crazy.
Right.
Yeah, Bill, isn't that the advantage of this proposal you were talking about? Is if you needed this money that you've been putting into this new account, you can take it out and put it into your pension obligation.
Right.
And CalPERS says you have to pay.
That's what it's for, yes. Yes.
Yeah, so I think
that money.
The ideal situation would be if you have enough would be to put 2 years worth in or put 1 year's the second year's in. So we're going to want to pay by July 15th to save the interest, right? So that money's going directly to CalPERS. If at the same time you could put in next year's, you're earning 10% and saving another 4 or 7% on the payment, you're doing pretty well. But you'd have to have enough to make that twice.
But Yes, and then...
But then cyclical, then that movie money moves here and you fund it.
And 2 years from now, you need that money, you take it out and
right.
use it, right?
That's right.
So, yeah.
I think that if you can swing that, you're looking at $500,000, right? If you can swing that and it's earning all that year, even if you aren't building it for all of time, you're at least getting something and getting the reduction if you send it right away the next July.
All right. Sounds pretty good.
You were going to pay it next year. I mean, you'd be 1 year ahead. But
so we'll just have to be there.
I mean, that might be a way to do it.
Yeah, the county pool in February, their average yield was 2.26%.
Okay. The late. Then you're talking about the late.
The county has $6 billion.
Oh, my God.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
You know, some good options.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see some history on each of those kind of plans. Would be good. Bill, you'll bring that for us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you. I think that would be good for the next meeting. And one of the reasons I was asking about when we have the next meeting on May 21st, and then after that, when our next meeting might be. So,
calendar. Oh, you're looking at the calendar after the 21st?
We don't have to. It's a little bit premature, but I'm thinking it would probably be sometime then, maybe in the fall, right?
So here's the question. You're gonna have a finance committee on the 21st, and then you're going to have the first reading of the budget on the 23rd. Do you think that there will be a need for the finance committee in between? Like, will the board suggest any changes that need work here or to be looked at if we go back and make changes? Or you're okay with skipping this process?
Tony, what do you think?
I think we should keep this process, but I need to talk to Debbie and Bill to see about getting the budget by the 21st. I know that's our goal.
Oh, well, yes, of course.
And I just need to check where everybody's at on that process.
Okay.
I'd like to keep that goal, but...
Right. So the 23rd, what I was suggesting is...
Yeah, somebody... Have
there isn't going to... Whether there are going to be suggestions for looking at things or making changes that the Finance Committee would want to look at before it goes back to the board.
So in that case, let's look at calendars. I mean, the May... Tony, are you fearful that the May 21st may slip?
It may slip. Well, the audit slipped.
Right.
And we were planning to present it earlier.
Right. So our first meeting in June will be, for the board, will be June 14th.
13th.
I've got the 13th.
Oh, 13th. Right. Sorry. I'm 13th, Thursday. So if the draft budget isn't done by the 21st to be presented to the board on the 23rd, we could do it that last week of May, the first week of June.
I think we'll shoot. We're going to try to make the 21st. I think we'll do that.
Yeah, well, definitely we're going to do that.
Do you want to put a hold on a date? And then
let's put a tentative date if the 21st slips.
Just a holding date, that's all.
Do you want the 4th?
Of June?
Mm-hmm.
For Finance Committee?
Mm-hmm.
What day?
That's a Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday.
And same time?
That's kind of the preferred date is Tuesday at 3.
June which?
June 4th.
4th.
So that would be a tentative if we can't make the 21st.
All right. We're just holding that date. We'll know by the 21st, certainly.
Okay, great.
And then let's say we do meet on the 21st. Debbie's asking the question, is the board likely to make some changes on the 23rd, in which case we might want a finance committee meeting. If the 4th still works, we could have the 4th as the draft review. You're uncertain, Michelle.
No, I'm just saying, I'm uncertain what the board will say. So I think that you kind of wait until the 24th to cancel, whether you see the 24th of May. If we make the 21st, if, then A, then B. I feel like
So everybody's going to hold the 4th and we can ditch it if we don't have anything to do.
You'll know by the May 24th if we make the 21st.
Right. Sure. And
what about the actuarial report?
We have the OPEB.
The new actuarial report that needs looking at. So I'm saying we may have enough stuff that we
keep the 4th anyway.
Have something to look at, I think.
Okay.
Would that be ready by the 21st, do you think?
We have it.
Oh, you have it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying. Are you going to try to do a whole budget and the actuary report? I mean, is that everybody's up for that? That's a long.
That seems like it would be long. So maybe we should plan on
Let's keep it the way it is.
Yeah.
And we'll decide on the 21st.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's leave the two dates, figuring we have enough, and if we don't, then we could ditch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
But what I'm hearing from you, Debbie, is that it's unlikely to be able to do the draft budget and the actuarial in one meeting, that we might need to split those up, in which case we should probably really plan on meeting
the fourth.
On the 4th.
I'm saying it's up to you guys. I don't know how much looking or changing. If you're like, yeah, this looks good, then it doesn't take any time at all. It's like, oh boy, let's dig. I don't know. I'm a little concerned about the 23rd being the board meeting, because I believe there's, you know, the audit to be then. Maybe they'll be fine with it. You know, Stephen will come present and everybody's like, okay, good. Or are they going to have questions because it's such a new thing?
I think in the past the audit's gone pretty
quickly. It's gone pretty quickly.
I mean, the budget should be pretty much hold the line.
Okay.
Budget, I'm assuming. I mean, I
yeah.
think
okay.
unless there's something that pops up that's really unusual, it should be.
No, I don't
okay.
think so.
Then maybe it's all going to be fine. I'm just being
day.
A worrywart.
We're going to keep the date.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Good.
There's another item you brought up before the meeting started about the contractor.
Well, I don't have enough information.
Yeah, we don't have anything yet we can work on.
I just wanted something to add to my stress level.
Right. Well, I'm going to move to adjourn the meeting. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. And Mike?
Yes. Adjourn.
Carl?
Oh, I want to stay here all night. Yes.
Rob?
Yes.
Okay. And I guess
yes.
those are
yes.
the 1, 2, 3. Yep.
I guess
right.
he left. Yeah.
I got Jim's Rob. Gone. I got Carl. I got Mike. I got Rochelle. So
yeah. You're only at five.
Yeah.
But Jim left, so it's five.
Yeah.
So he's okay with it. He's gone.